It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, brand new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, and all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. I don't know what you're waiting for. Go to FanDuel.com/Hardy. Make your first bet an automatic win with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
Five to Sports, Albert Toucher and Rich. Mark Wahlberg is a local treasure. He is very supportive of Boston. If he was on the plane, one of the planes in 9/11, it wouldn't have gone down like that, he says. And he has a movie coming out we just heard about, but he's developing a new one.
Are you talking about Mile 22? Once again, I'll say it. I've seen the trailer probably 50 times. I've heard the... I could still not tell you what the hell that movie's about.
It's about...
Looking tough.
It's about a group of people that don't exist, according to the government and legal papers, and they work in a clandestine fashion.
Okay.
To keep the country safe.
And?
That's all I know.
Okay. All right. Once again, you've probably seen it and heard as much as I am. Still can't figure out what the hell's going on. A lot of grimacing. I do know that. And speaking of grimacing and making me mean mugs... This open casting call that was this weekend, you know what kind of guys they were looking for?
Tough.
They were looking for guys that were a little tough. And they went down and said, listen, are you tough enough to be cast in the brand new Mark Wahlberg movie? If you take a look at what they were looking for, I've got actually what the open casting call out was. Like, you know, they need a certain type of person. You want me to read it to you?
I do.
It says, an open call for Mark Wahlberg film. In big letters, Mark Wahlberg film. Searching for real people. Character men with tough faces. Construction workers, blue collar workers, DPW workers, fishermen, mob guys, etc. Hey, they mix in mob guys.
Looking for a mob guy.
Hey, I'm in organized crime over here. I would like to be in your film.
So you're going to
you're going to arrest me.
Sure.
There's nothing that people in the mob like more, I would imagine, than publicly outing themselves as being in the mob.
It's kind of a wide net. You've got a member of the Sopranos sitting next to the Gorton's fisherman, apparently, at this audition.
I also enjoy that they are, and maybe they're being facetious about the mob, but that they, you know, fisherman, mob guy, it's all the same.
Right. They all come from the same cloth. And then once he got to the casting thing, it says, thank you for coming to the open call for the upcoming Mark Wahlberg movie. Synopsis. The story follows Spencer, who is fresh out of prison and stripped of his private investigator license. Sounds like a cop on the edge. He is sucked back into Boston's underbelly.
Spencer for Hire.
As he uncovers
That's
the...
That's what this is.
So this is the movie? Spencer for Hire, the movie?
Yeah. It's based on all the books.
He is sucked into Boston's underbelly as he uncovers the truth about a sensational murder and the twisted conspiracy behind it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, that doesn't sound like every single movie. But either way, they all came out. And there was a big-ass line down the street over in Alston, and Nick wanted to go talk to these guys to make sure that they were tough enough.
All right. See if the Thunderbirds would agree with him.
Hey, who's Rolls Royce is that?
I don't know. Did Mackie just pull up?
Is that Mark?
So, what's your name?
Mac?
All right, well, we're starting out.
And we're off.
Mark just shows up to the casting call.
Couldn't have started.
In a Rolls Royce.
I'm sure he's there. He just says, you know what? Give me this really gaudy Rolls Royce and let me look at my minions.
Hell, I'd do it.
You would show up to the casting call of a movie.
Yep.
I'd
show up and I'd just go, look at all these people who skipped work to be an extra. To make scale.
In a Rolls Royce. Yeah. Wearing a top hat and a monocle.
That's exactly what I would do. If I had that kind of money, sure. Go, hello, everybody.
Hey, who's Rolls Royce is that?
I don't know. Did Mackie just pull up?
Is that Mark?
So, what's your name?
Franny.
Can we use this for the radio?
Of course.
So what brings you here today?
Marky Mark, put me in the movie.
If you call him Marky Mark, you're right in. Likes that, I'm sure.
So what brings you here today?
Marky Mark, put me in the movie. Hire me. Give me a contract.
Without us, Marky.
Okay, cool. So this movie is about tough guys doing really tough things.
Yeah, yep.
What makes Mark Wahlberg such a tough guy?
He's Marky Mark. What do you mean? What makes him a tough guy? He is a tough guy. It's Marky Mark. Come on now. You're talking about Shooter. You're talking about Daddy's Home. Come on.
The casting agent are looking for guys who are extra tough.
Yeah,
are you tough enough?
Are you kidding me?
Am I
tough enough? Do you see my biceps?
Yes, I do.
All right.
What makes you so tough?
I'm the toughest dude, baddest dude on the planet.
Okay. Do you have any Boston sports tattoos?
Yeah. Right in the arm there.
What is it?
All right, so should we guess?
Oh, yes,
sure,
please.
Why not?
All right.
So, okay. Why not?
All right, so we know he has Boston tattoos, but let's go.
It's the B. It's the Red Sox B right on the arm.
Is that the only one you got?
The only Boston one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so he has...
Does he have anything else, though?
Does he have any other tattoos?
Yeah, does he have anything other than a B?
Yes.
What does he have?
A clover.
Yeah, shamrock. That's a layup.
Shamrock, clover, whatever that one is.
Yeah, I got the shamrock on the back.
Not being a tough guy is having a shamrock tattoo.
All right, so... hey, which one's his instant... Okay, here we go.
There you go.
All right, and we continue.
I'm thinking about this, and I'm thinking about all these tough guys out there, and I'm thinking of who we should have sent.
Fred, hello!
Okay,
hello! Fred, hello!
Hello, guy from Machine. Talked to him in a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like that's like...
It doesn't even matter if you're Irish.
Rule number one, shamrock tattoo. Yeah.
Who in this line don't look so tough?
I can't answer that.
No, you don't have to answer all of them. No, who in the line don't look so tough?
All right. Who don't look so tough?
What line?
This.
Randy walked right through that.
Yeah. I just skipped a line.
You skipped a line?
I don't wait in lines, yeah.
Okay.
Oh! Somebody signed this guy.
Just walk into the bank and say,
money.
Tough enough. Yeah, just walk in. Just walk in and say, cash, honey. How about a little moolah in the old Pomeroonie? Just walk in the bank and say money.
Franny, don't wait in lines.
This cantaloupe, don't even bother weighing it. I'm saying it's 75 cents. Was he flipping a quarter?
Next to a jukebox, did he kick it and started playing?
Johnny, don't wait in line. That's great.
What's something a super tough guy would say to sound super tough?
I don't know
his name.
You don't have to guess.
I don't know. I want to.
Okay. Right,
his name, right, I guess.
Your kid's got a jaw like a swing set. Yeah.
If you were...
Hey, Johnny, you got to wait in line. Not so fast.
Not Franny. Not your man Franny. Uh-oh.
If you were to go on a tough guy date with Mark Wahlberg, what tough guy stuff would you do?
Well, let's call it a night on the town.
Yeah, I mean, I'd probably arm wrestle him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then bend. One second.
Yeah.
Good luck. I love you, man. I'll talk to you soon, Uncle Bobby, all right?
See you later, Carmine.
Oh, man. Whoever did that casting call, you hit the lottery.
You nailed it.
Everyone you wanted to come out came out.
They're there.
Give that man or woman a raise.
Oh, man.
Was there kissing on the cheek?
Whoever.
Wow.
Uncle Bobby and Carmine were there. The whole family. I can see Uncle Bobby being there, but Carmine, come on.
What was the question again?
If you were to go on a tough guy date with Mark Wahlberg, what tough guy things would you do?
All right, I'd arm wrestle him, all right. Then we'd go to the gym. I'd outbench him, okay.
Fred,
we'd probably go back to my house, right? We'd rewatch the Super Bowl where we came back from 25 points at halftime.
20 left.
That sounds like a tough guy date to me, right?
Sounds pretty tough.
Yeah, we'd rewatch that Super Bowl.
what's a good tough guy song?
Phil Collins, In the Air Tonight.
I'm surprised.
I agree.
That's a tough guy song?
That is.
Okay.
Very tough guy song. Mm-hmm.
Especially if it's about someone dying like they have suggested, even though it's not.
Phil Collins, In the Air Tonight.
Class.
Yeah.
Why do you think that song?
Because it's coming in the air tonight, dude. What the f***?
All the controversy behind it.
How does it go? Can you sing it for me?
Tough guys don't sing. All right.
Okay. What's your favorite tough guy musical?
Rent.
Top of dome, baby.
Nice.
Fred, hello.
He had to think.
Nick, did you almost get your ass kicked there?
All right, get on the mic real quick, because I recall you telling someone that you almost got your ass kicked.
Kind of close.
Yeah,
I was getting on his nerves. So.
Well, there was. I mean, that wasn't the only moment he had. There.
Okay,
right.
You were getting on that particular guy's nerves.
Yeah.
Okay, so it was time to bail out.
Yeah, it was time.
Was he like a big guy?
Big enough to kick my ass. So,
right, well, that's not saying much. You got a fake heart.
You're pretty much an easy knockout.
Yeah,
oh, man. You got this point.
I mean, you're killing a guy if you hit Nick.
Am I tough enough? Do you see my biceps? Yeah, the kid's got a jaw like a swing set.
So there's going to be a lot of people who are going to be outraged and shaking their fists this morning.
Happiness comes from feeling good about yourself.
Breaking the mold on sports radio in Boston.
Is that why I thought of Sesame Street?
Toucher and Rich, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. The previous CBS Sports Minute was brought to you by South Shore Bank. Matt Chatham. He is going to be doing color commentary along with Dan Roach tomorrow right here on this radio station for the first Patriots preseason game. He writes for The Athletic as well. He joins us. Matt Chatham, hello, sir.
Morning, guys. How are we doing?
We are doing quite well.
Are you ready for just loads and loads of sunshine right up your ass standing next to Dan Roach while you're doing your radio broadcast?
Absolutely. And you won't see the sunshine because, like you said, we're on radio. So no more sunshine Dan on TV, but it'll be there.
Well, he has been demoted. So
what? I would say that, you know, he's doing a different gig. I don't know if it's I'd say that it's just
a sun shining on radio.
That's right.
As he is on television.
Without a doubt.
Who's doing the TV?
Soucy and
Zolak. Okay. Well, then Dan's been demoted.
Why is that a demotion?
Because TV, more eyes on it than the radio.
Radio is king. We can all agree on this. Come on now.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Matt, how are you? Is it not a demotion?
Well, you're asking a guy who was on TV and is now doing radio.
We were on TV and now we're doing radio.
Yeah, not a demotion at all.
Here's the way I look at it. I don't have to stand on the sideline for 3.5 hours now. I get to sit up in a booth and call full games. So I'm completely fine with the move. Danny and I are going to have a great time.
No, Matt is gotten a promotion because instead of being sideline, he's now color commentator. It's Dan who took the hit.
Make sure you mention that to him, Matt, during the broadcast.
Yeah, we'll every break. It'll be great.
it'll be a true test of his sunshiny attitude. Matt, it's funny. You know, we've obviously, you know, spoken to each other like when we've been out and about. We've run into each other at the Super Bowl and other things outside of the radio. But I don't think we've ever had you on the show. And the one main thing I've always wanted to talk to you about, and you've probably answered this a zillion times, but it's the first time you've done it with us, is can you tell us what it was like when that you laid out that streaker in Super Bowl 38. It's still one of my favorite memories.
Yeah, you know what? It was context at that time, guys. We're just a little bit removed there from the 9/11 stuff. So there just been a couple Super Bowls where they were crazy about the security. So, you know, there's kind of a weird heightened sort of what the heck's going on with any little burp during a game. And that guy was out there for, if I recall, something like 40 seconds. You know, where initially, you know, you're thinking crazy thoughts at those times. So it's, you know, bomber. What's this guy doing? Because he roams out on the field. He's got the officials out there. He's clearly not one. And, you know, no game security out there for a long time. And then when they finally did, you know, realized who it was, and they started making their way towards him. Then he ran towards myself and Larry Izzo. So Izzo's my old buddy. Izzo's just next to me. He's a center. I'm playing a guard. And I just remember kind of looking at him, him struggling, like, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? I don't know. And Brewski's behind me, and I picked the broadcast. Pick him up, and Brew was making this kind of goofy face, and it was just sort of a moment where all the guys on the kick return team were kind of looking at each other going, what do we do? You know, what is this? And then he bolted. The guy's name's Mark Roberts. He's been doing this his whole life. He does it at Wimbledon. He's done it at the British Opens, you know, 100 different events, and it's just kind of his shtick. And back in those days, like, you know, what it was called, one of the gambling websites had put him up for that little stop. So he had that gambling stuff painted all over his body. And he just took off. He ran our way. And I think part of me at the time was, you know, we just came out of those long, painful, you know, halftimes for Super Bowls. And, you know, it's a tight game and you're kind of a little agitated. You're like, okay, he doesn't have a bomb on him. This is just some clown. Let's get this guy off the field, because thinking in my head, okay, I've got such and such guy. I got a block on his turn. So it was more just like an aggravation. It's like, okay, dude, beat it. But since that time, we've already hit the 10-year anniversary of that. This is a reminder how old I'm getting here. But that guy, Mark Roberts, came back, I believe it was, after a 10-year thing. And Fox tried to do a reunion. He was trying to do a book tour. He was trying to get me involved in a documentary. He's been, you know, I got into my DMs on Twitter, which I had, you know, stopped that. And, you know, it's just like, dude, come on. You had your moment. I knocked you out, whatever. But let's not go there.
But that's one of those times, Matt, that if it wasn't the Super Bowl, I got to think, as a player, you almost kind of dream of some jackass running out of the field. Because don't you, like, in your head, aren't you like, I got a free shot to just lay somebody out who just obviously doesn't know how to defend themselves and is not a football player and is not ready for this massive hit he's going to get.
Yeah, and you know what? I mean, what happened after this, he was in about 30 seconds, like a thank you note, and, you know, like the security camera from all over the place. I'm getting like 10 different views, and they cut it up, put the music, and try to make a joke of it. And you know, one of the things that you realize is that, you know, you're big. I'm a big guy, and most of the guys out there are like that. I hit them, you know, 3 out of 10, 4 out of 10, just bumped in with my shoulder. He was flying. You get the sense that if I'd have really done something, you'd kill him. So it's just more, you know, it's just the difference between professional athletes all dressed up like that and a guy who's had too many donuts. So it's just, you know, it is what it is.
All right, so you mentioned Larry Izzo, just very quickly.
Because
what's the grossest thing you've seen Larry Izzo?
Hang on, Matt Chatham, we talked about this on the air, and Matt, if I'm not mistaken, you were defending Larry Izzo's honor after that discussion.
No. Larry Izzo's gross. Everyone told us.
We've had 2 or 3 different people tell us this.
What's the grossest thing you saw Larry Izzo do?
I think honor, definitely, loosely. Larry's one of my good buddies, but he was actually relaying to me back and forth in that the whole story. I think it was Brandon Merriweather that had told you guys Larry was taking his breakfast into the bathroom stall or something like that.
Yeah, he was taking a dump and eating breakfast.
And he's swearing up and down to me that he absolutely didn't do that, and I couldn't vouch, so I just played messenger on that one. But no, I mean, Larry's story is old this time. I think he was a guy that introduced me to the wipes, you know, to baby wipes. Bring them baby wipes with you on the road. And his old move was basically he'd kill a toilet, which sucked. And some, you know, you go to a nicer stadium, it might be, you know, New York or something, where there's 6, 8, 10 stalls, something like that. And, you know, your service had 53 guys, so you need to have them available. But in Green Bay's got like 2 toilets for like the entire team. And Larry goes through there, you like use up like half a package of baby wipes and then just clog the toilet and move on. So I don't know if it's gross. It's actually pretty clean, but it just kind of, from a utility standpoint, you kill a toilet and you kind of need it. So, you know, it's a weekend, week out thing on the road. Larry come in, he cut out with a kind of smirk on his face. And I'm like, oh, Larry, you need that. Well, but, no, he's a great dude.
I'm a baby wipe guy as well. But when you're using half a pack, oh, yeah. You haven't had a good night unless the next day you don't have to use baby wipes.
Right.
Like you can't say that you partied the night before if you don't wake up the next day and have to use baby wipes.
Point of pride, I get it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It becomes a situation where nothing's going to happen unless you take a shower.
It's like earning a Buckeye. You know, it's going on Amazon ordering baby wipes.
Yeah. That's absolutely true.
Okay.
How many times I've gone to my daughter's room and said, tee hee.
Yep. Tee hee. Yes.
I got to use the baby wipes. All right. So, Matt, one thing in this preseason that's going to be interesting is the receiving core. Unfortunate what happened to Malcolm Mitchell. Who should we look at? Who should we be interested in come tomorrow night?
That's a great question, Fred. We don't have an answer. What I'll tell you is look at the backs, which it sounds crazy, but it's such a cobbled together group of receivers right now. I sense that, you know, you get to opening day, Cordarrelle Patterson's role is going to be a little bit bigger. That's sort of a work in progress. It's going to be a greater role than he's had in other places, but this is kind of a catch and run place. Cordarrelle's a first round draft pick from the Vikings from years ago, had the pit stop in Oakland and a bad offense. And, you know, Bill's quote was, I'm going to use you right, or something to that effect. And because his place likes the screen game and likes the catch and run stuff and likes, you know, the reverses and stuff like that, he really fits in there. And I think there's going to have to be a lot of that for the first 4 weeks until Jules gets back. So he's one guy. The Philip Dorsett is absolutely in line to have a bump in a role. I mean, if you're a guy who does fantasy or DFS or anything like that, like, he's the kind of guy that'll be a nice late stash. He was, you know, buried on the depth chart a year ago, and understandably so. It's not like he was going to rise above Brandon Cooks, Chris Hogan, or any of the other guys. But when those guys are gone, he's a former first-round talent, and I really liked him last year. I mean, the times he got in the game, he'd run his routes, he'd get open, they'd throw him the ball, he'd catch it. It was limited opportunity. So I'm expecting more in Phillip, and like I mentioned off the top, I think the backs are going to be a big part of it. So it's just a weird place. You know, James White will line up in the slot, and he's wearing 28, whatever, but he's going to be playing wide receiver. So they'll motion him out. He'll be used functionally as a receiver often is. He'll still have Rex Burkhead there in the backfield, and maybe a rotating crew of Gillis Lee or Jeremy Hill or one of these guys getting involved that way. And just, I think, in part, start to think of the running backs as part of the passing game, because they typically are.
And the other big question, Matt, is Tom Brady's availability for game one. Usually he doesn't play in the first preseason game, at least the last few years, but the whole offseason was weird. He didn't come in for any of the OTAs, and he's still working on chemistry with everyone on offense. So you would think, because there are no joint practices to go through, he would play in game one.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good thought, and I was having similar ones until yesterday's practice was a pretty light day for the top guys, which I don't know what that means, because now we're a day before practice as if this were a regular season game, and this would be like Saturday. And so they're going to go out and do something today, but it's not open to the public. So oftentimes that day before, you kind of get a sense that they run really hard today, and those top guys probably aren't working on Thursday. But I think it's kind of up in the air, but you make a good point as far as just getting the continuity with some of these guys. And it's not as if, hey, he was away and he just needs to get back to work with Chris. They've already got a pretty tight relationship. They do the side field stuff all the time now, he and Rob Gronkowski. So, you know, he's back to where I think you would want him. It's just that one or two relationships. And, you know, maybe it's with Philip Dorsett. Maybe it's more with Cordarrelle. We haven't seen a lot of it. You know, they do individual drills with each other, but that's obviously much different than a live game situation. So, yeah, I don't know if it's going to be Thursday, but I think certainly you're going to see a pretty healthy rep count from Tom going through the next four games.
Matt, what do you make of the newer, more laid-back Bill Belichick that we're apparently seeing at camp? He's not running them as hard as usual. I mean, obviously not as hard as, I guess, when you were with the team. What do you make of that? And is there anything to read from how he's approached this preseason as opposed to the last few?
Well, I know he's a pretty philosophical guy. He likes to sort of study and research and try to figure out what he did right and what he did wrong. Again, obviously, he's never going to take that to the podium and tell you what he thought went wrong the year before. They'll just acknowledge that they didn't do good enough. But I think one of the things that are in a lot of coaches' heads that have gone through what they've gone through now three times, being the loser from the Super Bowl, you're a longer season than everyone but one other team. You have a short off season. You have some really important players on your roster that weren't a part of your Super Bowl, you know, from guys like Dante Hightower to Jonathan Jones at the cornerback position. Dietrich Wise played a real limited role in the Super Bowl, just six reps, was a really up-and-coming young rusher, had a concussion thing. You know, you can go all the way down the list. But the point is, you got a short off season, and historically anyway, most teams after a Super Bowl loss don't make it back there, much less win the thing. So it's part of it is just sort of trial and error to figure out what's going to work best with a relatively new group of guys. There are a lot of new faces on the defensive side of the ball. There's a brand new coordinator, not technically with that title, but Brian Flores is going to be calling plays over there instead of Matt Patricia, who's in Detroit. So I do kind of get the same sense that you do, that it's had a little less of an intensity feel to it, but they do work. I mean, they're over there running the hills after practice each day, and there's that element to it, too. And the one thing that really has struck me, because I'm sitting out on that grass hill every day, it's hotter than hell. It's been one of those just 90-degree every day, high humidity. You can't just take the guys to the ground because, you know, these are short off seasons. They get into these games quick. I mean, they've only been doing this for a little less than 2 weeks, and they're going to be playing tomorrow night. So I think that's a big factor in all of it.
All right, Matt Chatham, best of luck tomorrow night as you do color commentary right here on 98.5 The Sports Hub for the Patriots preseason game, along with Dan Roach. We appreciate it.
All right, fellas. Thanks for having me on.
All right, thank you so much.
I'm watching that video of Chatham laying out the streaker, and he's right. I mean, he just like barely knocks into the guy, and that dude just goes ass over tea kettle, just flies.
He weighs like 140 pounds, that guy. I know. Right?
And Matt's right. Like, if he would have actually tried, he would have like crushed the guy. He would have absolutely destroyed this human being. But I forgot that was Matt until recently, but that's got to be just a joy, especially if you're like a security guy. Like, I think about that, like at Fenway, like all the security guys, when some guy goes
Bird
running out the field. See, I thought it was Bird. No, Bird missed his chance.
Bird was filling out a report on something else. He was in the back. He wasn't on the field at the time. And so he was upset that he wasn't on the field at the time.
Right, because take
a shot at that guy.
Guys are like, I get my moment. Because this guy's going to be jumping around. I'm going to come from behind and just absolutely crush him. And
how often do you get a chance to lay a guy out with no repercussions?
Right.
Seriously.
And a giant crowd cheer you on
exactly
when you do it.
All right. We will talk about everything that happened with Cleveland in terms of the
Hard knocks
that was on last night, including the lack of respect they have for Hugh Jackson.
If you want to know, if you want to see just how good the Patriots have it and how that culture is just everything you want, take a look at the opposite. And that's what Hard Knocks is, and that's what the Cleveland Browns are.
We'll have that for you right after the headlines.
The games are only half of it. Thatcher and Rich, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
We're Thatcher and Rich. Hard Knocks on HBO is something I have not watched since the Jets were on it, and that was probably 10 years ago, so on we are to Cleveland, and Rich, there is a team that won no games last year.
No games last year, and the year before just won one. So both under the coaching of Hugh Jackson.
Yes.
And as I'm watching it, I watch the first episode of every Hard Knocks, because there's always a chance that it could be good to great. And as I said, the Jets one was excellent. The early ones were pretty fantastic as well. But then there was the Atlanta Falcons one, which was miserable. There were a couple good episodes in the Dolphins one, and I liked the Texans ones a lot. But I thought with the Cleveland Browns, the story was interesting because, you know, you had Baker Mayfield, who's kind of somewhat of a controversial figure. You either love him or hate him. And I thought that might be kind of Jarvis Landry, you know, how is this all going to work? But instead, I found myself about 15 minutes into it thinking, man, the people at HBO are brilliant. Because for the first time, you've seen inside the workings of mediocre to kind of good to all right teams. And for the most part, you kind of understand that no one is Bill Belichick. But then you got for the first time to watch the inner workings of what a true world-class loser organization and how it's run. And it's utterly fascinating, because this is a team that, as I mentioned, one win in two seasons, not a lot has changed. Most of the same coaches and pieces are still there. So they're just sitting there saying, you know what, all you players on the team, I want you to trust a guy who can't win a game, who can't do anything for your career. Hey, all you assistant coaches, I want you to trust this guy who honestly might have no idea what he's actually doing. And at the beginning of Hard Knocks, it's fascinating TV. I'm like, they're doing everything wrong.
It's been that way. I'm looking. They have one double-digit win season since 1994.
Dude, it's almost like watching The Office. At some point, it's like watching The Office. You know how everyone like thought Michael Scott was just an idiot?
Right.
That's what this season of Hard Knocks is. Like, the one thing that Hugh Jackson gets, the little bit of sympathy that he gets, is unfortunately he had some tragedies happen to him. His mother and his brother both died within like a several week period. So, I mean, it was kind of sad, and there were some, you know, pretty emotional moments. But then it gets to him trying to coach. Now, every season of Hard Knocks pretty much opens the first episode, or if it doesn't open, it's at the beginning of it, with the head coach making some big rah-rah speech to start camp. We know Rex Ryan's. His was legendary. Jason Garrett's was pretty bad because as soon as he was done, of course, the real coach stepped up and Jerry Jones ended up speaking. And there's been some pretty kind of lame ones. This is Hugh Jackson's pre-camp speech. Now, I love how in this clip, HBO, in the middle of it, tried to put dramatic music behind it to make it not sound as just lethargic as it was. Here's Hugh Jackson trying to get the team pumped up at the beginning of camp.
Welcome back. A couple of things I want to get to. Training camp 2018, ain't no stopping us now. None. But we got work to do in this room. I'm looking for guys that want to do. Does everybody understand? I can't hear you. That's all we need.
That's opposed to Jeff Fisher, who said "Tubestick Boogie."
That's right. Ain't no stopping us now.
This kid,
Ashford and Simpson, is that right?
And he's got on a PowerPoint presentation in front of them the words "Ain't no stopping us now."
Well, now who could lose?
I will take care of you. You guys know that, but I need guys that are all in. Earn the right to be on this football team. Nobody's giving anybody anything. Got to work for it. Think championship, guys. Not any mediocrity. Think championship. Why not? Why not the Cleveland Browns?
Why not?
Why not? Hey, you know, maybe we'll do something. Why not? Think championship. Yeah, you know, Dan makes a great point. Reference the Golden Knights. Like, just like something that will get these guys inspired instead of Ain't No Stopping Us Now. Why
instead
not?
Of a song from 1974, right. Before all of your players were born.
Right. Jesus.
Did you just look up if that was what you're
I had to, I was McFadden and Whitehead. I'm sorry. I got that wrong.
You were quickly.
I didn't look up the year. I looked up the guys. Okay. But, I mean, it's the 70s.
Your tagline, right, for your season, enough to put on a overhead projector in front of the entire team, is from a 1977 disco song.
Well, last year was the Maple Leaf Rag. Was the whole thing for the team.
The Charleston.
Yes.
Yeah, right. Let's do that up there.
All right. What is next?
Okay. So the very first thing that they try to show Hugh Jackson doing to act like a true coach was he weekly tries to tell Baker Mayfield that maybe he needs to put in more time like Tyrod Taylor does. Now, Tyrod Taylor comes across great on this. They show him showing up first thing in the morning.
Right.
He's the last one to leave. He's right now officially the starter of the team.
Right.
And so in the middle of this conversation, Hugh Jackson just kind of walks off in the middle of talking to him as if almost like this is getting uncomfortable and I'm going to kind of mumble the rest of it to myself.
What's up, my son?
I guess that's what you said when you said it was different.
I tried to tell you. And what time do you normally get up in the morning?
I was a little bit later this morning.
No, I know. But no, what time do you normally come over?
Depends on when we start.
Huh?
Try and get in about 2 hours before.
You ever come in with your boy Five?
He does his own little workouts in the mornings.
Where's your own little workout in the morning?
Huh?
Where's your own little workout in the morning? So starting your career how you want to. You see what I'm saying? It's a competition in everything you do, baby. You know how to do it. Why not?
So the last like 10 seconds of that, he's talking to himself, walking away from Baker Mayfield.
Oh my God. Yeah,
why not?
Holy.
He's just
God.
Like as yellow as it gets. He's just like, he's like scared to talk to Baker Mayfield.
Well, I would be too. Very emotional player.
So there's
grabs his junk.
Other than, of course, a highlight reel, like 3 minutes of Jarvis Landry making ridiculous one-handed catches. Like, I mean, the dude is unbelievably talented, and they show the rest of the team. Basically, the whole theme of all of the physical activity on yesterday's Hard Knocks was no one's trying. So you see these guys go out there. There's a bunch of players who like don't even like they're saying that they're hurt. They don't want to play. and everyone's kind of rolling their eyes. And then you see these guys go out there and they're not hitting hard and all the coaches are just kind of rolling their eyes. And it's just this loser. And Hugh Jackson's just, you can hear him under his breath, like just like rubbing his head going, this isn't very good. This isn't very good. Not good. And so Jarvis Landry gets pissed. So Jarvis Landry, who isn't really coming from a winning organization. I mean, he's from the, with the Dolphins, right?
Last but at year. Least a 500 organization.
At least it's a 500 organization. So Jarvis Landry gets up in the middle of the wide receivers meeting and goes and talks to these guys. And you can just see all the wide receivers just kind of like just hanging out. Just they, no one cares. And Jarvis Landry gets up in front of him, and he has to be the guy to say something.
So let me say something real quick. I don't know what the f*** been going on here, and I don't know why it's been going on here, but if you're not hurt, like if your hamstring ain't falling off the f***ing bone, your leg ain't broke, I don't know, like you should be f***ing practicing, like straight up, like that shit is weakness, and that shit is contagious as f***, and that shit ain't gonna be in this room, bro. That shit been here in the past, and that's why the past has been like it is, bro. That shit is over with here, bro. If you can practice. You can't get no better. Ain't nobody gonna get better by being on the sideline if you ain't hurt. If you're not hurt, you gotta practice. Because you make other motherfuckers work even harder. Now they had more risk of getting hurt because you don't want practice because you being a bitch.
Someone knows he's going to be on TV.
Yeah,
I don't care.
First thing I thought of.
Someone knows he's going to be on TV. This is a conversation that... No, it's not.
It's great.
This guy does. This guy's playing for the camera.
Dude, if you watch the entire... Like, if you watch what the way these guys are practicing and how awful they were and how no one's trying, he's finally like, all right. And in practice, you see it. Like, he's one of the few guys who's out there busting his ass.
Cameras.
Maybe, but it's a great speech. It's what needed to be said.
Straight up, man, that shit is f***ing real, bro. That shit ain't happening here. I'm just letting y'all niggas know that shit is not f***ing happening here. I'm hurting, I'm tired just like every f***ing body in this motherfucker. But I ain't taking no motherfucking days off because I can't be f***ing put that way. That gotta be the f***ing attitude and the mentality all the f***ing time. All that weak f***ing, don't f***ing live here no more. That shit don't exist. It's contagious, bro. Like, it's really f***ing contagious. It's contagious.
Well, it's certainly a lack for using clean language.
Yeah, he just
clean it up, Mr. Landry.
It is a little filthy. All right, so I think we have to break, right?
This works once 43 seconds.
Okay, so we'll play this one, but then we got to end it with the grand finale after we come back because, this one right here, this is kind of cool for Patriots fans. Willie McGinest was doing an interview for the NFL Network with defensive end Myles Garrett, and when the camera shut off, Willie McGinest kind of goes back into linebacker mode. This is pretty great. So let's take a listen to him just off the mic, giving Myles Garrett a little bit of advice.
Thank you.
I don't think I missed that.
Nah, how you covering?
We good? Mm-hmm. How you feeling, man?
I feel great.
Okay. How's your rush moves? You still working with Bruce Smith? Is he helping you? Okay, good. Good. Yeah. Stick with that, man. Use these long-ass arms. Because look at your length. Stick me. Boom. Now, when I shoot this one, slap. Now, look. See that?
Mm-hmm.
I can't recover. Or you keep it in there and you slap down. And then you got the swim or you got your rip. See that?
Variety.
Keep adding. You already got everything else. Just keep it.
Gotcha.
All right. If you need something, hit me, man.
Yes, sir.
All right, brother. Good to see you.
You too.
Because no one else is going to teach you anything here.
I know. No kidding. Jesus.
I mean, all right. So when we come back, Hugh Jackson is sitting in his coaches meeting and the coaches somewhat revolt.
All right. There's a revolution in Cleveland. We'll hear all about that.
The games are only half of it. Thatcher and Rich, 98.5, the Sports Hub.